On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Every man is or wants to be an idler, wrote the great Samuel Johnson in 1758, and he surely could have added every woman, too. From Johnson to Jack Kerouac to Ferris Bueller in the great age of slackers, the appeal of lounging, loafing, goofing off, vegging out has been huge, always there, snoozing right behind the work ethic. Now with the slide into summer upon us, who would not rather go fishing, hit the beach, catch a wave, loaf, leave the cubicle and the deadline and the time clock behind, and do nothing or only what we pleased? Up next, On Point, from Dharma bums to lazy bums and unrepentant slackers, the great and horizontal history of loafing.
Are you employed, Mr. Lebowski?
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me, you know? His dudeness, or duder, or, you know, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Are you employed, sir?
Employed?
You don't go out looking for a job dressed like that, do you? On a weekday?
Is this a... What day is this?
Jeff Bridges, major slacker in The Big Lebowski. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Tom Lutz. He's written widely about American obsessions and social counterforces. His books include Crying, The Natural and Cultural History of Tears, and American Nervousness, 1903, An Anecdotal History. His new book is Doing Nothing, A History of Loafers, Loungers, Slackers, and Bums in America. Tom Lutz, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be here, Tom.
Thanks for getting out of bed. And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst and diligent Dharma bum, a man who has to work hard to be lazy, Mr. Jack Beatty. Jack, good to have you here.
Thank you. Welcome to our guest.
Tom Lutz, all right, take us in here. All about loafers and slackers and why are they worth our time? Why are they worth a book? What do we learn with loafers and slackers and bums and you name it?
Well, I think that I loved that clip that you just played from The Big Lebowski. That part of what slackers are for us on a daily basis is fun. They are staples of American comedy and have been throughout our history. I wrote the book in part because I was hoping that what we could learn from looking at loafers is something about the very nature of our working, our understanding of work, our understanding of our own working lives.
I think that turned
out to be true.
No doubt, you look into loafing, and the flip side is work, and it's right there. I was reading this over the Memorial Day weekend. It was sunny and pleasant, and I was almost too big a slacker to read it, but I did anyway. It's pretty engaging. You take it right back and remind us that there was a time when the idea of slacking, loafing, didn't even make any sense in the historic economy of some centuries ago. Why not? And when did loafing show up?
Well, there are arguments, as on all historical topics, there are arguments among historians about it. But I agree with Hannah Arendt that in the classical era, at least, everyone agreed that work was just a curse, that it was the province of slaves or women or people who otherwise had no options. People like ourselves who read and wrote and were culture workers did not consider what we did work. It's only with the Industrial Revolution that the idea of that a work ethic arose and the slacker ethic arose in response to it.
So you've got to have a work ethic before you have a slacker ethic. Why no work ethic in the ancient days? I mean, you write about the Greeks saying that only the gods were remote from toil and misery. Of course, Adam and Eve got sent out to earn their bread by the sweat of their brow from the Garden of Eden. Why not a first century loafer or a 10th century loafer? Why not until the Industrial Age?
Well, if you were a philosopher in ancient Greece, if you were a poet, you did not consider what you were doing labor in the same sense that a person digging a ditch or building a pyramid was a laborer.
But what if he were just a ditch digger who didn't want to do it, who'd rather sit under a Bodhi tree?
Oh yeah, there's definitely one assumes that on the pyramid building crew there were a lot of it was a very large group.
Find me some shade in this pyramid crew.
And they there was the full range of human responses to labor in that group. That is, there were people who were gung-ho that kind of immediately got into the flow of the job and worked hard and tried to shine as a model worker. There were people who were less interested in that and slowed things down and took their time and got people angry at them. Freud says that as soon as man, in his old rhetoric, as soon as people understood that they could improve their standard of living through labor, it could no longer be of no interest to them how much their neighbor worked. It's with the Industrial Revolution, however, that we internalized, that we were encouraged to internalize a sense that work brought dignity, that work made us a better people, that work proved the kind of person that we were, and that things like poetry and philosophy and writing books of cultural history were not gentlemanly pursuits, leisure pursuits, but forms of labor themselves.
Jack, it strikes me. I mean, everybody at one level wants to be that natural man or woman, just picking lotus leaves and lolling about. I mean, on the one hand, we want to accomplish something. On the other hand, it's clearly deep in our bones not to be punching the clock all the time.
I think that's right. Although I think there's also a desire in everybody for mastery and competence. And the old Industrial Revolution idea that you pretty much had to coerce people to work, I don't know if that's true. I think people really want to do something and they want to have some kind of mastery. But on the other hand, yeah, I mean, we all want to work hard enough to be able to take some guiltless time off. And, you know, for many people, it's very hard to find. There's a guy down in Nantucket who owns this big mansion on the waterfront, paid millions for it. And on a rock in front of it, he's got a plaque. You know what the plaque says?
No.
I'm too busy working to live here. In other words, he's got the symbol of leisure, right. But he's trying to say, look, I'm superior to this. I'm buying this just because, well, I've got all this money, and I've got this money because I'm working.
so much for the leisure. Let's hear from Wayne Campbell here of the 1992 rock and roll airhead comedy Wayne's World. Here's the slacker as Dreamer, played by Mike Myers.
Let me bring you up to speed. My name is Wayne Campbell. I live in Aurora, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. Excellent. I've had plenty of Joe jobs. Nothing I'd call a career. Let me put it this way. I have an extensive collection of name tags and hairnets. Okay, I still live with my parents, which I admit is both bogus and sad. But at least I've got an amazing cable access show, and I still know how to party. But what I'd really love is to do Wayne's World for a living. It might happen. Yeah, and monkeys might fly out of my butt.
Wayne's World. And he's slacking. He's had his Joe jobs with name tags and hairnets, a big collection of those. Tom Lutz, you write how slacking inspires so much emotion. You say the emotional history of slackerdom runs the gamut from the tragic to the farcical, but of all the feelings it evokes, pride, frustration, boredom, anxiety, hilarity, anger, you say, is the one most common. Why does slackerdom bring out anger, even in yourself, with your own son in your viewfinder?
I know that's terrible, isn't it? But I had an angry father. My main goal as a parent was not to be an angry parent, and I had succeeded at this goal for 20 some years. And then my son
done some slacking yourself along the way, and then there is your own kid on the couch, and boom.
Yeah, it just flooded me, you know, surprised me that how angry I got. And I really wrote the book to understand why seeing my son lying on the couch at the age of 18 made me furious. And the first thing I found was that it makes everybody furious. That is the anger that you see in the welfare debates. Anger against welfare queens, the so-called welfare queens. Anger against slackers who are vampirically sucking our tax blood out of our lives. And the great comedy duos, of course, like Laurel and Hardy, are often one angry guy yelling at person that's not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
So we're used to this in our comedy and in our kind of everyday life. So, and it's not, in a way, it's not surprising. That is, you know, it's our fundamental activity.
But is it because I'm working and you're not, therefore I'm furious? Is it because you're slacking, calls into question my basic commitment to working, and I wonder why the heck have I been doing this for all these years?
Yeah, maybe the slackers are right. I mean, that does run through one's mind. I think Jack's right that mastery and competence, you know, exercising our competencies, getting into the flow of work is one of the great pleasures of life. And we assume when we're in the midst of a hectic, busy week that we are somehow accomplishing something, that we're doing something worthwhile. The slackers make us question that, and that questioning can create some anger as well.
We're talking this hour about goofing off, kicking back, idling, and its great history in Western culture, Western counterculture. Lots of slackers in the arts and the movies. Sean Penn found a career-defining role in the surfer slacker Jeff Spicoli in the 1982 high school comedy Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
The world's finest surfers showed up today to do battle with what's turned out to be the biggest waves to hit this coast since 1946. Hello, everybody. I'm Stu Nahan. I'd like you to meet this young man. His name, Jeff Spicoli. And, Jeff, congratulations to you. Things look kind of rough out there today.
Well, I'll tell you, Stu, I did battle some humongous waves. But, you know, just like I told the guy on ABC, danger is my business.
You know, a lot of people expect that maybe Mark Cutback Davis or Bob Jungle Death Gerard would take the honors this year.
Oh, those guys are fast!
That's fantastic. Let me ask you a question. When you get out there, do you ever fear for your life?
Well, Sue, I'll tell you, surfing's not a sport. It's a way of life, no hobby. It's a way of looking at that wave and saying, hey, bud, let's party.
Sean Penn, 1982, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He laughed more in those days. Jesse's calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Hi, Jesse. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, Tom?
Good, good. What do you know? What do you know? Are you a slacker?
Yeah, I guess I am a slacker. although I don't know if I define it that way. I actually feel, you know, I take a lot of days off, but I work really hard so that I can pay my rent and afford to do that.
So you've made a lifestyle choice, and what do you do on your days off? Are you in the hammock? Are you gone fishing?
Pretty much, you know, I do a lot of reading. On days like today, I like to get out and enjoy the day. You know, I live in Jamaica Plain. There's lots of parks, lots of places to be outside, walk the dog.
We're jealous. What do you make of people who are punching the clock then? You've made a decision here. What about those who work and work and work?
Well, again, I mean, you know, it's a choice that people make. I mean, you know, I don't have a fancy car. I live in a small apartment with a roommate in Jamaica Plain. And, you know, sure, if I wanted to work a lot more, I could have more money, but is it really, you know, you talked about the guy on Nantucket with the house. I mean, is it worth having all those things if you can't stop and enjoy them?
And you've got it worked out so that you can. Bravo to you, making the decision to do it. Let me get a call from Providence, Rhode Island. Pete's on the line. Hi, Pete. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I was just going to mention that as a young man, one of my early slacker influences was Maynard G. Krebs from the Dobie Gillis Show.
Oh, sure. Sure.
He used to be on when I was a kid, and I used to, you know, they mention a word work, he would freak out. And that was like an influence for me. I said, that's the kind of guy I want to be.
there's the counter hero, Maynard G. Krebs. Pete, we're glad you set your eye on that high star. Tom, let's take us through the American pantheon. Where does it begin, the kind of slacker crew in this country?
Well, with a number of people who are now long forgotten, I guess Maynard G. Krebs won't last more than a century either. But
those reruns—they live on forever now.
Yeah, Nick at Night. The Joseph Denny was an early American slacker. He was a kind of failed lawyer, of a failed journalist who wrote a number of slacker characters. Precursors of Spicoli.
What period? What was
this is the late 18th century into the early 19th century.
And what was his reception when he was writing as an early slacker? How did Americans respond? Did they say, "Oh yeah, that's just what I want to do," or throw brickbats?
British visitors coming to America wanted to meet Joseph Denny. He was considered the most important author in America in the 1790s.
Wow.
Okay. The most important non-political writer, although he would write political screeds as well.
You write about a kind of dialogue in effect between Benjamin Franklin and the British, the great British writer-thinker Samuel Johnson, as illuminating the slacker taproot here. Describe that to us.
Well, Benjamin Franklin is the man who, when Max Weber described the Protestant ethic, the Protestant work ethic, he used Franklin as the prime example of the secularized modern work ethic. And Samuel Johnson presented himself, signed a lot of his essays, The Idler, or The Rambler, that quote that is my epigraph, that every man is or wants to be an idler is Samuel Johnson's. So, and he, and the famous biography of Johnson by Boswell shows him lounging around, drinking, running in at the last minute to write his copy for whatever journal he was writing for at the time, and coming back out immediately to start drinking and lounging around and talking, and not enough energy even to kind of straighten his own wig or powder it properly.
Couldn't be bothered.
And Franklin, you know, as we know, started universities and fire departments and inventions, to study electricity. He did, you know, he's a kind of a man of achievement.
Wrote Time Is Money, a fairly lasting aphorism.
Exactly. And as it turns out, though, Johnson was himself, had a very, very strong work ethic. He was constantly berating himself in his diaries for not working hard enough, making New Year's resolutions where he was going to get up before 9, and when he was in his 30s, and in his 40s, he was going to get up before 10. But even in his 60s, he was claiming, I promise myself and my God that I will get up before noon from now on.
That's Johnson. So Franklin had a daily schedule, or at least said he did every day, sort of written down what to do at each time.
He said he did, and he seemed to follow it, although he also says in the autobiography that it's much more important to look busy than it is to actually be busy. Mm-hmm. So he made a big show of picking up reams of paper for his print shop and wheeling them down the road, but as soon as he got to the shop, he let his helpers take over. And he did retire at the age of 42, and when he was in Paris as the head of the American delegation, John Adams tried to get him fired, said he does nothing except flirt with the ladies. The only thing he's not late for is lunch. He was a lifelong fan of the air bath, which is basically getting naked and laying around for a couple of hours.
Ooh.
With the windows open.
That sounds 100% slackeration, kind of appealing. Jack, what about Benjamin Franklin? I mean, he seems like the prototypical early American slacker, which is make your big score and then have fun.
Yes, and you know, John Rockefeller, strangely enough, whom we think of as the prototypical, of course, one of the greatest businessmen, had some of that in him, too. Tom quotes a statement he made late in his life where he said, you know, I was something of a slacker. And he was. I mean, he would leave the Standard Oil offices in Cleveland at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, go home and skate with the kids. And when he was in New York and he would be going by the office of young people working for him, he would say, look, you're diligently looking over papers. I want your feet up on the desk, your head, your hands behind your head, and I want you gazing out the window. Because if you're
Rockefeller's
just
advice,
push all the routine away from you and come up with an idea. And he says, you can't just do that, you know, doing the routine. I want people to be creative. So he really understood that a certain amount of slackerdom and letting, and you know, and leisure and recreating is productive. Of course, you don't want to even talk about it in those terms. That just turns everything into work. But in fact, like Ben Franklin, he made it pay.
Tom, you write about how the frontier versus the East had a kind of a tension here with a lot of frontier Americans who made their stash, made their money, but then had a, you know, not such a disciplined attitude toward work once they had. They reaped the bounty of the frontier and then went on to other things.
Well, and again, this is not simply an East-West difference, because Franklin was the prototypical Easterner,
sure.
and he did the same thing. Tocqueville mentions that the Western legislators that he met were all men who were living a life of, you know, civic contribution, but basically a life of leisure after having made their money on the East Coast and moving west, or coming west and making their money and stopping. But there's also a North-South difference. The Jamestown colony immediately tried to limit work to 4 hours a day, something that you can't imagine the Puritan New Englanders doing.
No.
So there's a lot of regional differences. But I guess part of my point is that in any work world, the sense of duty and the sense of being free from duty are going to be at in some kind of tug of war in, within any individual at any time. And part of understanding one's own slacker self and understanding one's own dutiful self, these two things are part of what we all do all of the time. I can think of myself as a incredibly hardworking person. I wrote another book, for crying out loud. But I can also think of myself as an incredible slug. And the two things are part of the same package.
But some people spend more time outside that iron cage than others. Let's hear the voice of a southern slacker from Panama City, Florida. Denise is calling. Hi, Denise. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. Everybody's good today.
We're good. We're taking it easy.
I wanted to tell you about the probably the best slacker job I've ever had. And I'm going to preface this by saying I worked many, many years at about 70 hours a week. And I found myself in a position where I could slack. My kids were off in college taking care of their business, all this stuff.
Sweet. What'd you find there?
I went to work in this little itty-bitty rural hospital as a radiographer, an x-ray tech. My only requirement when I stayed there for 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, was to be within 30 minutes of the hospital. So each Friday morning, I would pack up my fishing gear, my picnic basket, and I essentially drove about 40 miles down to this little town of Port St. Joe, camped out there in the hospital, and went and got some live bait, went out fishing all day, caught some stingrays.
Where the beeper and everything else is up to you.
That's pretty much it. We'd have barbecues in the back porch of the hospital.
So you had it. You got the life of Riley.
And I made pretty good money down there fishing all weekend and just wearing the beeper.
Now tell the truth. How did that wear on you over time? Did you like it or did you think, I've fished this hole too many times. I want to work harder.
I never felt like I wanted to work harder. I did that for years. That I had plenty of that. I had enough of that. Basically, I felt like the time will come when I'm going to have to get a real job. And you know, when you turn 70, 75 years old, by then your hip breaks or something, I'm going to go ahead and be half retired right now before my hip breaks or I go blind or something. So I thought, you know, to take a little slice of retirement out of the middle of my life is going to be perfect. I never felt guilty or anything.
Oh, Denise, you've got your finger right on the pulse of it. You make us want to slide right on out of here, and we will. Thank you very much for calling. Let me get a call from Augusta, Georgia, and Susan. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to say that we might regard our early scholars as slackers, since the original definition of schola means leisure, lecture, school. The Greek word scholastikos means enjoying leisure and devoting one's leisure to learning. At those times, only gentlemen of means could afford the leisure time to study.
So Plato and Aristotle, those big-time slackers.
Yes, indeed.
Wow, that's great. Susan, thanks for calling with that. Tom Lutz, what about the origins here?
Well, that's exactly right. And the more common in America was the reference to the Latin otium, which is that Cicero used to describe what he was doing, which is the life of leisure devoted to learning. People have throughout the last few hundred years, throughout the Industrial Revolution, have returned to this idea over and over again. We need leisure in order to have art and philosophy and culture, and that only the leisured person can create that. And what's happened, of course, in America is that people like myself, I have a job. My job is as an educator, and I don't think of that as a leisure pursuit. I think of it as work. One of the questions is whether or not there's some loss involved in rethinking everything that we do as a form of labor, rather than thinking of it as a form of play or leisured exploration.
I mean, one thing that your book does is challenge the notion that the world of work, which is so dominant in the U.S., should or must be of necessity our fundamental contacts for understanding life. The idler, the slacker, is kind of a reminder that this is one way of doing things. There might be others.
And there might be others, and even there are costs to the way we understand the world, as well as benefits to the way we understand the world.
Slacker itself, the phrase, reminds us of the love-hate kind of relationship with idleness here, and it had a pretty rough edge on it when it first came into common usage. Remind us of the history there.
It first got used in its in anything like its current form during World War I to mean a draft dodger, somebody who wasn't doing their patriotic duty. There were a series of Hollywood films, anti-slacker films, that really were draft dodger films. And John D. Rockefeller, as Jack suggested, was one of the first people to use slacker in its sense of somebody that's just not doing their work duty. It gained that second meaning very soon after its draft dodger meaning in the late 19-teens, and then fell out of use a little bit, came back in during World War II to mean draft dodger again, but doesn't really become the prime word for what we mean by slackers until the 1980s.
Mm. Carla's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Carla. You're on the air. Are you slacking, Carla?
Yes, I'm out walking my dog in the park.
All right. Are you a career slacker?
Yes, I am.
How do you manage it?
I started working at age 14 and worked summers, weekends, and at age 39, I married well. I was able to be a stay-at-home housewife with no children, and about a year ago, my husband died, and he left me well off financially, and I love not working. I don't think I'll ever want to go back to work.
So what do you do with your time when the dog's been walked and you've, you know, watered the daisies?
I volunteer. I'm a docent at our downtown public library. I'm a fundraiser for an organization that gives music lessons to underprivileged children. I work on the Nashville Film Festival.
Pretty great. And when you look out on the world of work, the world where I live, let's say, how does it look crazy to you? Does it look too driven? Or do you understand yourself in a special lucky circumstance and why everybody else is dashing to work?
I understand I'm blessed. Very, very blessed.
Yeah, we hear it. Enjoy it, Carla. On our behalf, vicariously, we'll be walking that dog with you. That sounds great. Jack, we really do need people doing it both ways. I mean, you can't have everybody lashed to the grindstone all the time and still have the sort of full dimensionality of life going on.
No, and the founders saw, to them, Carla was their ideal. They saw leisure and the backing away from the grindstone as imperative to Republican citizenship. Notice how many of the things she mentioned had to do with other people, mm-hmm. with caring for the
common
weal,
time. Yeah.
With volunteering. It's people who have some leisure and who have obviously some goodness and some concern for the country who can do that. And the founders really thought, well, that's what we need.
We're talking this hour about goofing off, kicking back, idling, and its great history in Western culture and counterculture. My guest is Tom Lutz, author of the new book, Doing Nothing, A History of Loafers, Loungers, Slackers, and Bums in America. Maybe the prototype for the modern American slacker might be Herman Melville's famously inscrutable Bartleby the Scrivener. In 2002, the playwright David Ives adapted that story for radio. In the beginning, Bartleby is hired by the narrator to copy legal documents for his Wall Street firm.
At first, Bartleby gorged himself on my documents, copying by day and night. Not cheerfully industrious, but silent and mechanical. Then came a curious moment on his third day, when I needed him, and I called to him behind his screen. Bartleby, come forth. I need you. Mr. Bartleby? Bartleby!
Yes, sir? What is wanted?
I need to examine a document with you. Here, take it.
I would prefer not to.
I beg your pardon?
I say I would prefer not to.
Prefer not to? What do you mean? I want you to examine this document.
I would prefer not to.
But this is common usage. Every copyist must examine his copy.
I prefer not to.
But why? Why do you refuse?
I would prefer not to.
You have firmly decided not to comply with my request?
My decision is irreversible.
Bartleby will not be reversed, and there you've got it. A century and more later, you've got Office Space and Clerks and the Big Lebowski. We're talking about idling. You can join us. Why do Americans, the kinfolk of Huck Finn and Jack Kerouac and Bartleby, work such long, long hours? And in a globalized world, can we afford to loaf? What do we learn from idling that we don't learn anywhere else? We're at 800-423-8255. Patrick's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you know, Patrick?
I was just curious as to whether or not while you were while he was researching for the book, if you came across anything about the Church of the Subgenius.
Oh yeah, that's there.
Yeah, that's you know, their whole premise is all about Slack and whatnot.
It's right in the middle of it. Tom Lutz, Church of the Subgenius. Where do you find it in this spectrum of work and ease?
Well, it's a classic slacker comedy. It's a very interesting kind of an underground comic at first. That if you bump into this not knowing what it is, you can't tell if it's an actual scam, an actual fake religion, or simply a comedic take on fake religion. The Church of the Subgenius is much more knowing than some other slacker comedies in that it says right out, we want your money. And we are providing this slacker comedy because we would like you to join our church, and you join our church by giving me, the Subgenius, money.
And the teachings when it comes to slacking are, what does the Church of the Subgenius recommend?
It recommends the main principle of the religion is slack. To do nothing is the end and goal of all life. But of course, since it's a comedy, it's constantly reversing itself as well, and it's and suggests that really what you want to do is make as much money as you can from if you're not a sucker, you want to find some suckers to give you money.
Suckers and slackers. Patrick, have you taken inspiration from that unholy advice?
I wish I could take more of it. You know, I wish I had more slack myself, but I'm an aspiring slacker. I work pretty long hours, but I just enjoy the humor of it. It's really interesting stuff to read, and I really enjoy the show, and your book sounds really interesting. I'd like to read it.
Great.
Well,
Patrick,
thank
you so much for calling. Let me get a call from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Eric is on the air. Hi, Eric.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, who is Riley? My mom used to accuse me of having the life of Riley. Who's Riley?
Well, the life of... Yeah, Riley was originally the life of Riley is originally an Irish slur. As you know, immigrant groups are often accused of laziness. Any group that's considered to be outside the mainstream is often considered lazy by the hardworking center of the culture. And the life of Riley was simply a way of saying, look at the lazy Irish. Isn't it great the way they get by without working? It also became a TV show in the 50s. It was one of the top primetime TV shows in the 50s about a factory worker who the opening credits always showed him waking up late for work.
And, of course, it went from being a slur to being something that millions aspired to, that life of Riley.
Yes. Well, that's always true, I think. There's always a great desire and repulsion from the idea of the person who gets away with doing nothing.
Stuart's calling from Beverly, Massachusetts. Hi, Stuart. You're on the air.
Tom, I've been listening for 10 years, and finally you've done a show about me. Thank you very much.
Okay, slacker, stand up. Give us the word.
Well, can I break it down?
Yeah.
I think it's valuing leisure time more than consumerism. I think it's that simple. And I think you do a disservice by, I mean, maybe it's a term of endearment calling you a slacker, but it's about not spending your last dollar on buying the newest thing or getting the newest thing or the biggest house. It's about spending the last hour of your time with your family or in a fishing boat or in a rowboat or whatever it is that you like to do that society says, well, that doesn't produce income.
And so you see it as a noble thing, reminding us of all that's best.
I see it as exactly a noble thing. I think the country's gotten itself in a big hurry. And I think we run around just trying to make sure that we do the right thing. Even in our leisure time, we have to buy a bigger boat. We have to buy a bigger, a better tent, a better this. And you know what? Just enjoy your days. Do if you have something that's competent and works well, spend the time. It's about diminishing marginal returns of the next dollar.
Stuart, we've got it, and we love it. Thank you so much for calling in with that. Tom, you quote Karl Marx's son-in-law, of all people, saying, all individual and social misery is born of the passion for work. There is this theme that sees, all the way from sort of Taoism right on through Mr. Lafarge here, that sees idling as a kind of noble calling.
Absolutely, and Stuart is right that I think what Stuart is doing is exactly what the slacker figure is designed to do. That is to get us to think about what is important, where our values lie, why we work, what we're working for, why we should stop working. It's exactly the stuff of understanding our most important values that the slacker makes us look at, Slacker helps us look at, see ourselves in a mirror, our own working lives in a mirror. And it's no surprise that the Slacker figure is very important at moments when the work world is changing, as are Franklin-like Time is Money, or, you know, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. That book comes out at the same time that these Slacker movies that you've been excerpting came out. So the two things happen at the same time.
Right. And Jack, what about Stewart? He's saying, be careful, America. You've got yourself lashed to the wheel of consumerism, so you're working way more than you need. Just sort of unbuckle this formula and, you know, the lilies of the field are right around you, as the man said.
Yeah, well, you know, the agrarian poets, as Tom points out, of the 30s, John Crow Ransom, Robert Penn Warren, and others from the South, they wrote about this. They said the kind of leisure provided by industrialism helps nobody but merchants and manufacturers who have taught us to use it in industriously consuming the products they make in great excess over the demand, which is just the point Stewart is making, that if we work hard and then we have consumption-driven leisure. We have to go expensive places. We have to do expensive things. We have to be in expensive boats. And so even our leisure has this industrial character. But, you know, we're going to have to get used to it, I think. I mean, we've had economists on this show talking about what's going to happen and what is happening to the American job base. And we may be looking at a future where all of us are working less and having more free time, because those jobs just aren't going to be there. So the whole business of learning how to use your leisure and how to recreate yourself in that leisure is something that Americans who pushed it away are going to it may well have a future here, and not altogether a willing and voluntary one.
More free time and maybe a little less cash to go along with that. Tom, I wanted to ask you about, I don't know if there have been studies done, but where people's fundamental satisfactions really come from. I mean, if you're just working your brains out to chase the next buck, it doesn't sound good. On the other hand, you write about how people at work can get into the flow, which can be very, very gratifying. It comes with mastery and accomplishment, and sort of the flow of work can feel liberating or exalting. So how do you look across the spectrum at how humans interact with work and leisure? Which, can you say, which ultimately leads to greater satisfaction?
No, I think that you fundamentally can't. That is, both things are valued in the society, and since they're at opposite ends of possibility, every individual is going to pick and choose as much as they can from the array that's in front of them. I know for myself that if I don't write for a week or two, I start to feel odd. I wish I was a better slacker than I am. I start to feel like I'm not enjoying my life as much as I am sometimes when I'm working too much. At the same time, if on those weeks and months of 70-hour weeks, all I want to do is stop, get on a beach somewhere, lay around. This kind of dialectic is a constant part of, I think, most people's lives. But to be fully human, you experience all of the highs and lows, and I find great satisfaction in hard, relentless work. I find enormous satisfaction from stopping it for as long as possible.
And Walt Whitman, of course, in Song of Myself, inviting, saying, "I loaf and invite my soul in the slacking." Tim's calling from Dover, Massachusetts. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Actually out on my bike here. Excuse me, I'm a little out of breath.
where exactly, you loafing biker? Where?
I'm in Dover, Massachusetts, and there's a big conservation land here, trustees of the reservation. And I've been out here about half an hour. I haven't seen another soul. So everybody's apparently not slacking. And we're 20 miles from Boston here. So.
You expect to see Thoreau coming through on his mountain bike?
He's got to be out here.
if only we had a better slacker ethic, the woods would be full of loafers and daisy pickers?
Well, I think it's a matter of balance. I work in the evenings, and I got to go pick up my daughter from preschool in about 20 minutes here. But I think you have to enjoy those moments that you have off. And I think in general our society is moving too fast, and we need to get back to some of the simpler ways of life. And I live in Dover, for goodness sakes, where it's everybody has to try to do more, and I'm trying to figure out ways to get my kids to be less over-scheduled and have more fun. So.
That's wonderful. Amen. You're breathing a little hard for a slacker, but we like the idea of the bike in the woods. True. Tim, thank you for calling. Mark is calling from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. I wanted to echo an earlier caller who talked about kind of retiring in your 20s, which is how my mom put it.
Okay.
And when I was in my 20s, I was very healthful and energetic, and my two obsessions after college were the Grateful Dead, following them all around the country,
yeah,
and playing a sport called Ultimate Frisbee.
Oh, so you're the archetype here.
Yes, I am. And, you know, was there, that sport itself is very physically demanding, and I played at a very high level, so I had to be in good shape, but I really spent all my money on plane fare and gas. And anyway, the point I wanted to make, the job I'm doing right as we speak is called pet waste removal.
Charming.
I go to people's backyards, and I clean up after their dogs and bill them based on how many dogs and how many times I come per week. And it kind of fits with the slacker attitude in that I listen to music and I listen to you guys all day. But what's great about it is I have no competition.
So have you found your niche? Is this it,
I found
Mark?
My niche, yeah. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to say is I talk to my son a lot. A lot of jobs are either you have a shower before work job or you have a shower after work job.
Yeah.
And I lived in an academic setting with my wife and family, and I always thought I would be a shower before work guy, but it turns out that I am much happier as a shower after work guy.
Oh, wow. Turn up the sugar magnolia and definitely take that shower. Mark, thank you very much for calling. Let me get one more call here. Heather from West Boylston, Massachusetts. Hi, Heather. You're on the air. Hi.
Hello. I wanted to just contribute one observation I had in a position I had before what I presently do, which is, I guess, could be considered a bit of being a slacker, but it's the perception of being a slacker in that the environment in which I worked is very joyful, and we really enjoyed what we did and enjoyed working with each other. And even though our productivity was very high, because our department was full of laughter, we were considered slackers.
So you can be a hard-working slacker, or the downer folks around you just couldn't stand the laughter at work.
We were quiet. We were maintained within our department, but when people came in and they saw us laughing and enjoying ourselves, they thought something was wrong. And even though our hard numbers would come through, and they go, "Oh wow, you know, they went up 200% this quarter." It was very hard for people to reconcile seeing a department of people enjoying themselves and also doing work.
I love it. The sort of laughing Buddhas bringing in the numbers. Maybe you managed to get everything there. Heather, thanks for calling with that. Tom, a couple of things. One, our Commander-in-Chief, El Presidente George W. Bush, you cite him as no mean slacker himself.
Yeah, he is, of course, now famous for taking more vacation days than any president in history and has a classic slacker profile as a young man.
And when you look around now, where's the country going? Do you see it, as Jack says, being sent into, what, enforced slackerhood as we maybe step onto a different rung in the world economy?
Well, I do think that there's a lot of anxiety about what work lives will be like in the near future and in the far future, of course. But in the near future, the outsourcing, the continually eroding industrial base in the country, these things have people very nervous, and the result is that we are as people did at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, we're getting a lot of talk about the work ethic. So Thomas Friedman, in his most recent New York Times Magazine piece, talks about at the end, his peroration is all about how we need to learn how to work better. We need how to learn to work more efficiently.
They are gaining on us.
Work ethic. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I assume that we're going to continue for some time because of this anxiety to be in a golden age of slacker comedy as well, that the slacker will continue to help us think through what our relation to these economic changes is going to be.
And the advice from Jack Kerouac, our Dharma bum, what would he tell us at this moment?
Well, Kerouac would tell us to get out on the road and have the rucksack revolution that he helped to start, in fact, and wander around and do our Zen meditation. Kerouac, of course, himself was a fairly hardworking guy. He wrote 12 novels in one 10-year period. He until he began to drink too much to write, but he didn't always follow his own advice, like most of the slacker authors that we know.
But he reminds us to keep the window open to all that, and we're grateful for us. Tom Lutz, author of Doing Nothing: A History of Loafers, Loungers, Slackers, and Bums in America. Tom, may I say, take it easy.
Thanks very much. You too.
It's great to
and
have
great
you
work.
Well, thanks for joining us in Los Angeles. And Jack, I hope you'll put your feet up today.
They are up, Tom. I'm enjoying my air bath. Just don't tell the neighbors.
Ooh-wee. All right. Keep the shades down or, okay. I don't know, throw them open, Jack. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. You wish that summer could always be here. You wish that summer could always be here.